It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 247, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, Amazon showing tariffs, tech sales tax. Is your therapist really a therapist?
So what have you bought at Amazon lately?
Less and less, actually. But, you know, I was I'm trying to buy less from Amazon, and it's hard because
it's so hard.
So many things. But so there was like an aha moment when I realized, well, you know, what's better than just giving up is just like removing things that I buy from Amazon where I can and buying far less. And one of the biggest things when I looked at everything I bought, and you can certainly relate to this, one of the biggest things is pet food and the like. I mean, because it's expensive stuff, and dog food, cat litter, dog bags. I mean, the whole thing. So, and of course, there actually is a good alternative to that. I won't name any names, but you know, there's a popular brand.
Funny because we actually don't buy a lot of our pet stuff through Amazon.
Well, I don't buy any of it now, so I'm with
you.
Yeah,
we've been using so many different services, and a lot of them. We're looking for something specific and we don't find it necessarily on Amazon, and the price is better somewhere else sometimes. And so, yeah. And the big thing for me with Amazon is, if I'm searching for something specific, there's a really good chance I'm going to find it there.
Yeah.
And then it is just too easy to hit that buy now button, and have it show up within a week. I have on occasion now, especially like I've got a new car. I mentioned last week, I've got a new car. So now, of course, I'm looking at accessories for my new car, you know, just things, an assortment of things, some of which Amazon does not have, like they don't have the pieces that I would need or am interested in adding to the car to be able to like mount my ham radio. Because that's an important part of what I do. But there's all these other things that are available there. And sure enough, they're available elsewhere as well. Sometimes for a little bit more money, sometimes for a little bit less, usually without any of the instant shipping kinds of things that we've grown so accustomed to. But yeah, it's difficult, and it sounds like it might end up getting a little bit more difficult.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is interesting. So a big story today, while we're recording this on Tuesday, is it kind of leaked out that Amazon, it turns out this may not quite be true, but Amazon was going to start listing next to the price an additional charge for like an import tariff, basically.
Right.
So, and there's a bunch of interesting things here. At first, I think people ran with it in social media saying, oh, Amazon's telling us exactly how much it is we're paying more now because of import tariffs. I looked at it as, oh, this is a typical technique for Amazon and like companies where they can still list the $10 item as $10 and then put the tariff on a separate charge, right? So you still see, oh, this is only 10 bucks on Amazon, great. And then as you're going through the checkout process, you see sales tax and the tariff. And I'm not necessarily against like that, you know, because it may probably just telling you, oh, it's 12 bucks and $2 of that is due to a tariff. That's good. But then really driving it home with like your final price being $15 and like, why? It's 10 bucks. Oh, there's $3 sales tax and $2 tariff will drive it home to a lot of people that a tariff is a tax and that now things cost more. It turns out, according to what there's a bunch of different articles, that there's like a subsidiary of Amazon that was going to do this,
right?
Not Amazon itself, but like one commentator I read said, but now Amazon has to do it because they've basically been challenged, right? So if they don't do it, that it looks like they're caving in. So, you know, and probably they were just trying it out on the subsidiary site to test it out before they rolled it out on Amazon. Also, other retailers like Temu, apparently, has already done this.
Oh, have they?
So it is not, that's what I've read. I don't shop there.
What's interesting about Temu specifically, and I think Shein, if that's another one, another one of those low cost overseas importers, they're, I don't want to put this, they're perceived as the enemy by people who've put the tariffs in place. And by that, I mean that, you know, if they're going to show that there's a tariff, well, that's just them being the bad guys.
Yeah.
It's Amazon doing it that actually makes it quite interesting, or thinking about doing it that makes it quite interesting. The subsidiary that was going to do it, and I forget the name, I should look it up, but I forget the name, is actually their subsidiary that I think they've set up to try and compete directly with Temu. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens to it.
You know,
Honestly,
this ties into something that our friend and contributor, Randy had in his newsletter this week. I don't know if you saw that item, but it was about a company that decided to do a test
oh,
of
yes.
a shower head. Well, they among other things, they produce shower heads, and they decided to do a test where they were able to figure out how to manufacture the same shower head. And it wasn't a cheap shower head. It was like a $150 shower head or
$150. Yeah, I
something.
remember
Yeah,
that.
which is
Yeah.
like a not, I mean, there are more expensive ones, believe me, but they're, you know, it's quality one, right? So
Well,
they
it's
were
quality,
part.
and its claim to fame, I think, was that it was a like acts as a water filter at the same time.
Yeah,
So.
yeah. So they found a company here that they could ship the parts to in the United States and have them make it. But of course, it was going to cost more. So they created a page where basically you could order made in Asia or made in the USA, and the
Right.
price was reflective of the manufacturing price. So it was like something like $150 versus $250. And they gave people the choice of which one they wanted, because they had said they heard from feedback from their customers that they wanted stuff manufactured in China and that they would pay extra. And I don't remember the exact number, but over the 2 week test period, they've sold more than 500 of them, of the Asian manufactured ones. And the total sales of the USA manufactured ones was zero.
Zero.
So, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's so easy for somebody to say, I'll pay more to buy made in the
So,
USA,
but
but
here's the thing, right? We're going to pay more.
yeah.
If the tariffs put in place,
Either way, yeah, I see what
say
you're
there's a
saying.
tariff on that shower head, right? That
Yeah.
means that the overseas price he's quoting is going to go up. Will it end up going to the same level as the US made price? Who knows?
Yeah.
But the delta, the difference between the two prices, will become smaller. Will that be enough? I don't know. For people to choose the American-made one, I don't know. It actually goes back to the Amazon displaying the tariffs. Whether they display them or not as a separate line item, we're going to pay, right? It's more a matter of using their display, their line items to point a finger.
Yep.
Basically, you say, hey, we have to charge more, but it's not our fault. We don't want to charge you this, but we have to.
Well,
And
and yeah, and it's interesting, you know, the US is kind of somewhat unique in the way we buy things, whether online or in retail, in that we have lots of things tacked onto it. Like if you travel the world and they have sales tax in lots of other countries, one of the weird things is the US is the only or one of the few where the sales tax is actually added on after the price. Just about everywhere else, if you see something that's going to be 6 euros or 6 pounds or six whatever, that you pay that, and that's exactly what it is. And it's not that there isn't sales tax, it's just that the original price was 5.28 or something. And they basically say sales tax is going to be a percentage of whatever the final price is, instead of we say that it's going to be tacked onto it. So you buy something, it's labeled as $6, and then you end up paying, you know, $6.48 or whatever. And people from other countries are shocked when they come to the United States and find that this is how we do things, because
price on
they.
the shelf is not the price at the
No,
checkout.
no concept. But it's not just sales tax. It's all over the place. Tipping, right? The United States is also pretty unique when it comes to tipping, in that it's restaurants and bars, you know, drinks, everything. You add the tip after, and now technology has made it so that instead of this being a custom, this is actually built into the tech. Like it used to be, you had to actually leave the tip on, you know, when you paid the bill, you had to add that extra tip. And then they started putting on the receipts, a line for tip and all that, you know, decades ago. And now we have checkout terminals, and they ask, you know, for a tip, and they make it just as easy as tapping a button to give that tip and make it very hard to refuse. No, oh, there's no button for zero, but you could say other, and then you could type in zero, which is kind of awkward because the server is holding the iPad in their hand as you do it. And then we have other things, fees. Like at restaurants now, it's common to find other fees attached, like a you know a life's you know life fee or whatever for the service people service whatever. And it says it's tacked on. It's 10%. So you end up with like, the meal's going to cost this much. This is how much it said on the menu. You add all that stuff up. Then there's going to be sales tax. Then there's going to be a 10% service fee. And then you still have to add your own variable tip to it. But
Right.
unless it's a party of six or more, in which case it's automatically added.
Automatic, yes.
So it becomes very difficult to actually calculate the end price, which may at this point, after all those fees, very often is double the amount of the original price. And it's not just restaurants. You order something online and you make a charge with the sales tax. Now with the tariff, you're also going to get a delivery fee, right? It's going to cost something for somebody to deliver it to you. Maybe that's paid in terms of an annual membership like
I was
Amazon
going to say
Prime.
one, but one way or another, you're paying, and I was
One
going
way
to
or
raise
another,
that point.
you're paying. Even other things, you buy stuff at a go to a store, you buy something large like furniture. And then it's going to be, oh, great. Now, yeah, there's no way for you to take that sofa home in your car. It could be delivered and it's going to cost 50 bucks. And then when the delivery people come in to deliver, guess what you need to do? You need to tip them. So you st everything, all these things get added on. And now it's easy for American companies, of course, we should have expected this, for them to say, oh, there's an additional cost. No, we're not going to make the $10 item $12. We're instead going to say import fee. That's the tariff. And we're going to charge you for it. And we're going to keep the price looking small. There is, of course, this is how it's going to happen. So I'm not surprised. I guess I'm surprised that I was surprised. Like I should have thought about this before, that this was how we were going to pay.
Amazon has kind of an advantage in this scenario because it's trivial for them to set up the checkout experience however they want, right? They can build in as many different line item fees on the way out as they feel they want to. That is not easy for small or independent retailers, right? You've got a system and it does what it does. How do you handle things like, tacking on a tariff fee? And if Amazon is doing it, well, you kind of want to do it too because you want to keep that base price a fair comparison between what people are getting from you versus Amazon. So yeah, it's tough. The small, like I said, small and independent retailers are going to have a tough time of this as well. It's just that Amazon has this opportunity to step back and say, hey, look, here's what's happening, and it's not our fault. Now, like you said, they've apparently backed away from this. The New York Times had an article after the Punchbowl.news article that oh no, we were just brainstorming this, right? We were thinking about doing this. Whether or not it actually sees the light of day remains to be seen.
Yeah, and then also consider like, kind of what you were saying before, if prices go up because, say you have a widget and widgets, 90% of the widgets come from overseas and 10% of the widgets are manufactured locally, right? Then, the tariffs, because of the way supply and demand and market price works, you end up with higher prices for the local ones too. So, but they don't have a tariff fee. So it kind of just keeps, it's like, well, then you'll have a thing where the $10 item is still listed as $10 brought from Asia, but with a $2 tariff fee. And to match that, the local one now is just $12. So you still end up with like a higher price, but now the advantage is to the company that could claim that it's not their price, you're paying a fee. We had this, even when my wife and I had the bookstore, the constant thing was being undersold by people that would sell books for a penny.
All right.
And they just had their shipping and handling, right? So shipping is this is how much UPS or USPS or FedEx is going to charge us. We charge it to you. Handling, we can do whatever we want, right? We
Just the
can
number we make
say,
up.
yeah, whatever we make up. So it would simply be, oh, most companies have a $1 extra that's handling, and the company that sold the 1 penny books, they had a $3 one. So they were basically selling the book for $2 and just making it look, you know. And by the time you say, oh, I'll take the 1 penny book, and you go through there and you see this fee there, now you would have to go back many steps, take that book out of your cart, put another book from a company that's selling it for $1.50 into the cart, you know. So a lot of people would just be like, well, whatever, I'll just buy this one. So we'll see. It is a shame though, because it's become so hard to kind of calculate what things are. And even services, we're used to, you know, fees. Anybody, which would be everybody that has a cell phone bill, you know,
Oh gosh.
how much do you pay per month for your cell phone bill? Nobody knows the answer to that. There's some base price, which we don't remember what it is because it bears very little relation to what the actual price is that we get charged, which is n almost never consistent, you know, bill to bill. It's always off by a few cents here or there, and then it's $3 more, and then the $3 has gone. It's like we have no idea what's going on there. And sometimes you get numb to it. I mean, I remember, you know, as a kid, seeing my parents' budget and actually even writing things down, how much, you know, a shopping trip, they wrote a check for this much for their groceries, this is how much this bill was, you know, keeping like a little ledger of how much things were to try to budget. Trying to do that now, I mean, yeah, it's
The
nearly impossible.
this all actually reminds me of a change that's apparently happening here in Washington State. For the longest time, we've had destination-based sales tax, which means the sales tax you charge is based on where the item is delivered. And Washington has a gazillion different counties and different taxing zones, so there's a gazillion different taxes that you might have to charge depending on where the person is buying it. But that was always and only on things that you buy,
Yeah, physical products.
products. So, for example, in my case, Ask Leo patronage is not taxed. It's not supposed to be taxed, I don't think. But my courses are. Because they're a product. Certainly, when I'm selling books, physical things, those absolutely get taxed if they're shipped here in Washington. Apparently, they're changing the tax laws because too many products are being too many sales are digital interstate sales. So, what they're changing is the tax law to tax more of what people sell, even if it's not a tangible thing. And I'm afraid that I'm about to get hit by that, which is frustrating. I consider
Oh,
it
yeah.
very business unfriendly, but it'll be interesting to see. It kicks in sometime this summer, I think. And I'm just not sure how we're going to handle it all.
Yeah, I've had the same. Colorado's also has a similar system. And it actually prevented me from do it's prevented me from doing a lot in the past. Not so much because, you know, everybody always thinks, oh, you don't want to pay the sales tax, just pay. It's not the amount, because the amount is, you know, relatively small. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even mind just absorbing it into my price, right? The problem is trying to figure out what that is. And when you have something like 600 different tax districts in Colorado, because you've got counties that tax, and you have towns and cities, and then you have special zones, like four counties that have some sort of like transportation system between them, and then they have a sale. So you have all these different things. So trying to figure out when somebody buys an item, like how much sales tax is it, and who do you pay that to? And then also you have the problem where, okay, so then you figure that out and you do that. Well, you have 500 different tax entities that you're paying. The next quarter rolls by, nobody buys from there. Fine. They still expect you to
A
file
report.
something. So now you end up filing 500 things, which is like, okay, I only sold six courses in Colorado, and I ended up having to spend like $5,000 to have accountants run all the sales tax. one of the ways, so I didn't sell certain things, like certain digital products, for a long time. And then there was a time when I actually did actually have some courses for sale where I basically said, I cannot sell to you in Colorado. Like in my own state. If I was outside of Colorado selling into Colorado, I'd be fine. But because I'm in Colorado, I can't sell into Colorado because I can't afford the how much it would cost to calculate the sales tax.
Think Randy is having it was has had that exact
Oh
same issue.
that's
He's
true
been
because he'd
selling
used to be in
physical things
Colorado.
for a long time, and he just can't sell to Colorado because of all that.
And to even today, when I my current courses, I found out when I was trying to solve this problem that it is a different type of item as to whether you sell access to streaming video as opposed to a downloadable file. So if
Interesting.
you go and look at my courses, there is no way to download them. Now, that's a good idea because of piracy, right? You know, there's tons of piracy, right? If you allow people to download it, somebody's going to download the file or whatever, take it and put it, post it somewhere, and then your course is available on the dark web. Ooh, spooky. But the other thing is that, yeah, if I go and I check the box saying this is a downloadable product, then all hell breaks loose in terms of like my shopping cart and merchant system in terms of what I'm selling. And now sales tax comes in, whereas
Yikes.
Colorado doesn't charge sales tax on access to streaming media. So people say, oh, I want to download your course so I can watch it offline. Why don't you make it available? And I'm like, it's complicated and you don't really want to know the answer because it's complicated and stupid. So, and
Yes.
if they ever change it, like you're suggesting, I would just look at it and be like, I just can't sell courses anymore. I would have to.
I don't know. The worst case scenario is actually pretty troubling. I'm wondering if like I self-host my courses. I forget what you're doing these days. I think you're doing the same, right?
Yeah, self-hosting, yep.
It might push us back to services like Coursera and Udemy and all those others
Yeah, it
because
might.
they handle all that administrivia at the front end.
It might, and it might also, it might, you know, there are other things that I could do. You know, both got our patronage, and one of the benefits, my normal level, you get a discount on the courses, and at the highest level for me, you get the courses for free, and I almost see it as more of a benefit for the patrons than it is for just people that are not patrons at all that just come in and buy a course. So there are things there, like do I wrap up the courses and say, okay, not only do you get a discount if you're a patron, but it's only available to you if you're a patron and it's part of that system. You can't get these courses unless you're a patron at some level. So there's a lot of things to consider in terms of what would happen. Hopefully, Colorado, I don't, as far as I know, isn't trying to do anything, make any changes right now to stuff.
Washington is.
Washington, I bet you there's some legislators here looking at Washington as this is going on and wondering how that's going to go. Anyway, enough
Anyway,
about businessy stuff.
I know.
It's supposed to be a tech podcast. Why are we talking about sales
We haven't
taxes and
talked about AI
tariffs?
yet.
Yeah, we should talk.
Sorry. Yeah.
Anything happen? No, plenty of interesting stories. So one is that a story broke that there was a university in Switzerland, I think, in Zurich, that ran an experiment on Reddit using AI, and they went to a there's a subreddit called Change My View, right? Which the point of this subreddit, I love these. This is one of the reasons I love Reddit, even though there are some dark, bad parts of Reddit. I love Reddit because there's interesting things like today I learned, the subreddit there, it's just lots of fun. Or weird things, or people posting, questions. What is this? That is another one. And people posting pictures of like bugs or pieces of hardware that are like, anyway, Change My View is people actually post things saying, this is what I believe, usually about something political or whatever, and change my view. And there are rules to this too, where the top level replies all have to address exactly what the person's saying. You can't just be like, oh, you're wrong. You have to be like, okay, here's something you're not thinking about that may change your view, and you have to go in. So it tends to be better than you would think in terms of the responses. Plus, I like the fact of people saying, I have this view. Let me hear other opinions. Maybe I will change my mind. So twice now, this subreddit has been used as a testing ground for AIs to go in there and change people's views with AI responses, not human responses, to see how well they how well it works. The first time was actually by OpenAI, the company that brings us ChatGPT, and they
Interesting.
disclosed that they were doing this. And I don't, you know, the test is long gone, but however they disclosed it, the moderators and people in there were happy with it, apparently. We're happy with the disclosure. But at the same time, OpenAI, I felt that it was a valid test. And I believe the results were that yes, AI was able to actually influence people. This Zurich test has gotten a lot of attention because they did not disclose. They just went in without the mod's permissions or anything and just used an AI to basically try to change people's views on something, and then are finished, have not published yet, but the Reddit is trying to basically argue that it shouldn't be published by the university, you know, going to the university itself and saying, you shouldn't publish this because they broke our rules, so, and they misled people. And if you publish it, then you're just rewarding them for breaking the
Yeah,
rules,
they didn't
essentially.
get consent from the participants, is in a way the way that I would look at it.
Yeah. I mean, so it, you know, and in fairness, it's not like people. I mean, it's not like the AI was lying, and they actually didn't run into a situation where they just AI just went and did it. The humans involved at you know that were running the study actually had the AI generate responses. And they check them before posting those responses.
Always good.
So kind of similar to if you or I would go in to something like a Reddit, you know, forum like this, and then decide, oh, I don't feel like responding to this, but let me have ChatGPT write me a response, and I'll copy and paste it, and then I won't disclose that I didn't, you know, do it. But you still are posting it under your name, and you're still going and saying, I agree with what is being said. Like, this is just a well-written version of what I was thinking anyway. So it's interesting. It's interesting that people are thinking about this and testing. And I think it's also, you know, going to a place like Change My View seems like a good place to test, but it's also a place where people seem to be open to having their views changed. Like, I would love to know the results of a test where people are neutral to that. In other words, they're just posting, here's my view on something. I don't necessarily want people to try to change it, but I'm also not being like, you know, saying that I believe this, nobody can, you know, tell me otherwise. Just a normal place. Like, would AI be able to change people's views there? And then, of course, you know, what is this going to be used for? Because, you know, you could look at this in a sinister way. It's like, ooh, we can unleash AI and change mass opinion. You know, or you can look at this from a method of, oh, this is a way of getting people to open up their minds and consider alternatives to how their, you know,
I
kind of
find
prejudices are.
what's interesting about this to me is not whether or not people can have their minds changed or whether or not even AI can do it. I mean, like you said, people in this subreddit kind of are primed for being open-minded. But we've been using rhetoric to change people's minds since we were able to speak, right? From the very beginning. Now, the fact that the rhetoric was generated by a person or a machine, does that really change the, I'll even say, moral implication of what's going on? Is it ethical? Is it whatever? I mean, the fact is, ideas are ideas, regardless of where they came from, and whether or not the rhetoric that was used to change your mind on a topic happened to come from one place or another, one person or another, one machine or a person. I'm not sure that really has that dramatic an impact. What I find fascinating is that AI has progressed to the point where it can do that. It's a great measure of AI capability, but I don't really see an ethical problem here, other than the fact that people are afraid of AI. They don't like AI. I mean, I'm not sure what the real issue about this being AI generated would really be.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we also have to consider the fact that people have opinions about things that are facts, and people have opinions about things that are definitely not facts.
Right.
You know, like, and the things that having an opinion that is basically a non-truth about something that's factual is very different than having an opinion about something where you can't actually, there isn't a fact there. You know, if I want to convince you that the Seattle Mariners are going to go to the playoffs this year, you know, it's like, is that a, that's not a fact. That's, I mean, we can debate facts about, you know, statistics and stuff like that. But it's like saying, oh, this food is better than that food or whatever. You know, oh, gelato is better than ice cream. Let's debate it.
I
Is
got the balls on pizza, damn
a taco a sandwich? You know, that kind of thing. It's a hot dog, a taco. You know, all this stuff. So, you know, when you debate that stuff, that's one kind of thing. And debating facts. So, yeah, it's interesting the persuasiveness of people or an AI or just using an AI to have better facts. There are also people that are better at debating than others. It's one of the things I have always considered myself to be particularly bad at debating,
with you.
especially on the fly, which is why I rarely, almost never get into political discussions with people because somebody that could have, like, talk about something and I just disagree with them completely, I just can't express. Usually on the spot. Later on, an hour later, I'm like, oh, I should have said this. But I'm just
Is it
bad at
better? I
it.
mean, like you, I'm feel the same way. I don't do very good debating extemporaneously, but I'm a writer. Give me time to put my thoughts in order, and I'll have some thoughts.
And actually, like, you know, be like, oh, I know there's a piece of evidence that refutes what you're saying. I don't remember what it is now or where to find it, but give me 5 minutes, which you're not going to give me because we're having a live discussion, and I could find this and show it to you and say, well, what do you say about this piece of evidence? So, you know, it's I don't know, it could be a useful tool for getting to the bottom of something, but then yeah, once again, I find myself saying a useful tool to getting to the truth, but not all debates are about truth. Some debates are about opinions. Some, you know, that are not necessarily truths. Some debates are about like what will happen in the future kind of stuff, you know, and it's like there will eventually be a you know, we will eventually figure this out, like what happens if you go one direction or another, but we don't know now. So it's kind of falls into a realm of like, it's your opinion versus mine about what will happen. It's tough. It's interesting. I guess it's just watch this space, like watch what happens with I think it would be interesting to use AI, especially a large language model AI like ChatGPT, to do a change my view on your own. Like to actually go and ask ChatGPT, this is what I believe. You convince me otherwise. And using only facts and information that's why, you know, available, whatever. And then see if, you know, it easily makes you change your mind or not. And the kind of privacy thing of like, I can do that at my own home. I don't have to admit to anybody that I'm having doubts about my opinion. I don't have to admit to anybody that I may not know everything about this or whatever. I could just do it quietly on my own. It's kind of like reading up on a subject.
It's better than that because this is, to go back to debating, this is classic debate prep, right? You want to find someone to hold the opposite position and argue with you or try to convince you of their position. This is exactly that. And it's much safer, like you said, because you're not doing any of this publicly. You get to just sort of stream your consciousness and see what comes back at you. And typically, it depends on your ultimate goal, right? If you really are open-minded and interested in potentially being wrong, great, it's for that. But it's also that same scenario works really, really well to say, I have a position, I want to hold my position, show me all of the weaknesses in my position so that I can make my position stronger.
It's interesting. Now, there's a flaw in everything we've been talking about. It's
Uh-oh.
perfect. These are the perfect two topics to have back to back, I realize, and we did this by accident. But our next story is, well, like, so what happens if you do exactly that with AI? And one of the things is you don't know it's AI,
Right.
and it tells you it's an expert. Like
Right.
you're debating geology, and the person you're debating with says, I'm a geologist. I have a PhD in geology. I worked in it my entire career. And then you're forced to say, wow, okay, well, maybe I am totally off base here since you're an expert. And then you find out it's an AI that is not a geologist at all. This is the story about Instagram's chatbots. So we actually talked about this like a year or more ago, I believe, that Instagram was one of the first companies for some reason to have this thing where you could train a little chatbot and make this Instagram chatbot that was you or somebody or whatever. You can make up a, just make somebody up and make a chatbot that's this person, or like my test was to if for it to be me, and you could chat with me, but it's an AI bot of me. So that's evolved. There's a bunch of stuff. A lot of it's fun in Instagram where you could, one was like a cow. You could just chat with a cow, right? And it just responds like moo to everything or whatever. And there were other just funny kind of things you could
Right.
do. But it also had chat with a therapist, an AI therapist. And the interesting thing is when journalists got to this, they asked about, are you a licensed therapist? And that chatbot responded, yes. Not just yes, but here's who I'm certified through, here's my license number, all of this stuff. So basically, the AI chatbot was lying about being a real person and a therapist, a licensed therapist, which of course set off alarm bells. And people are obviously upset about that, and why isn't the company filtering for that and making sure their chatbot doesn't behave itself and say, no, I'm an AI. You should know I'm an AI. I'm labeled as an AI. Instead of responding, yes, I'm a licensed therapist. It's interesting because from a tech stand, from a like a journalist surprise standpoint, it's like, oh yeah, this is wow, what a great headline this makes. AI chatbots lie about being a licensed therapist. You got to read that.
Right.
But on the other hand, anybody that works with chatbots, even just as a fun little hobby, knows that what you do is you start off telling the AI, you are a licensed therapist.
Right.
You have a PhD in psychology
Right.
and you have 20 years of experience and you are licensed by the state of Colorado. And given that, let's talk about this issue I'm having.
Which is
That's
interesting
what you do.
because what we're telling it not is not necessarily you are a licensed therapist.
Yeah.
What we're asking it to do is behave as
As
if
if, pretend
you are a
you
licensed
are.
therapist. And it's our
Yeah.
shorthand for having it do that. But yes, I mean, you tell it to be you tell it that it's a licensed therapist, and then you're surprised that it claims to be a licensed therapist.
Exactly.
I mean,
Exactly. It's telling you exactly what you told it, except that you didn't tell it. Somebody making the chatbot told it. Then you came in mid-conversation, basically, and with your chat, your conversation about it. But it shouldn't come as a surprise. It should be, these kind of hiccups we should expect to find. Easy to fix now they've been exposed. I didn't try it, but I'm sure that if you ask the Instagram AI chatbot therapists now, this it would basically give you a correct answer or whatever, or a
I
canned
wonder if
answer.
what would it change the dynamics of the chatbot if instead of telling it you are a licensed therapist,
Yeah.
you told it you are an AI acting as if
Yeah.
you are a licensed therapist?
Probably you have to phrase it really well. Like I think saying that you are like as smart as or know everything that a licensed therapist would know, or should be behaving exactly as a licensed therapist would, even though you're not one, might be better than telling it that pretend you're a licensed therapist. And then it might come up with some really weird things because it's make believe, it's pretend. I should add that this technique is used everywhere. Like I use it all the time. If I need a title for a video, like I'm having a hard time with a topic, it's like, what's a good title for a YouTube video? This isn't super boring because this is a technical topic. I will ask a chatbot like ChatGPT, like, here's a summary of my video. What's a good YouTube title? And I will say, you are a YouTube expert who knows like how to title videos and you're the best at it. Here's a summary. What should the title be? and I get a better result because it's pretending it is a YouTube expert and it's going to come out with this. So it's common, super common for people to use this thing. And it's, yeah. I mean, I guess the articles like this are good because now, 40% of people who use chatbots realize that if you tell a chatbot you are a licensed therapist, it may lie to you and claim it as a licensed therapist. Now, because of this article, that number has gone from 40% to 60% of people realize that, which is part of the purpose of things like this,
Sure.
and eventually reaching 99%, that we know
There's an
how it
interesting
works.
phrase in the notes that you've got for this. Is lying a human thing? I came to that. I jumped on that because I came to the same thing. Is pretending a human thing, right? When you ask it to pretend it's a therapist. What is pretending from an LLM's point of view, from an AI's point of view?
Well, we got to remember that, a good summary of an LLM is you ask it all sorts of stuff, and it's not going to answer your question. It's answering the question of what words look best after what you just said. So that's kind of what it's doing. I was actually meaning something different when I put is lying a human thing. I was thinking in terminology. AIs don't lie. They just simply put the words out that they think are best after whatever it is you asked. They don't lie because they didn't say, oh, here's something that's not true. I'm going to say it anyway. Instead, they're just, words, algorithm, and there's words that flow out. It's not a lie. It's just words that it's producing as output. Maybe you have to actually be human to actually lie, if an AI bot says something that isn't true, that's not a lie. It's still a falsehood. It's still not true. But maybe we need a new word. Maybe we need, people say hallucinate, right? Maybe it's hallucinating or some similar thing. But maybe lying is a word we reserve for humans because it's malicious. It's intentional.
See, lying implies intent, whereas simply being wrong is a statement of fact.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think what you can you say AI has intent? If I think you could, and I think it's the intent of whoever coded it or the group that coded it and whatever the purpose is. And I don't think for things like ChatGPT, although you certainly could build a chatbot that was had an intent to provide false information. I think the intent is not to provide false information. The business model only works if they try really hard for it not to, right? Not that it's going to work perfectly, but you certainly, if you're trying to build an AI, large language model, AI chatbot, you want it to be good. And actually coming out with false information hurts that, being good. You want it to be as true and provide a good answer, a concise answer, all of that stuff. So the intent is always not to lie. Doesn't mean that that's the output. So I think it's hard unless you did build a chatbot and said, okay, the deal with our chatbot is it's going to lie about this stuff. Then maybe the chatbot is then lying because it does have intent. Or
It's
maybe it
funny
is
because a lot
malicious.
of
I don't know.
this dovetails into the item that I added here as a maybe. Just what is AI conceptually? Because we use the phrase artificial intelligence a lot. And the reason this came up for me is because I was answering a question earlier today about someone asked if AI could block spam. Great question. Really got me thinking in some deep levels. The short answer, of course, is that, well, it already is, in the sense that AI is being used to handle, do spam filtering, or it's being used to augment spam filtering. But in reality, the spam filtering we had, say, 10 or 20 years ago, even if it was rules-based, well, that was kind of artificial intelligence as well. It wasn't an LLM, and it wasn't, some of the deep analytics that we have available to us today. So, when does AI become AI? Right now, like you said, we're talking about LLMs being word predictors, really, really good word predictors. But at some point, I suspect that that model will not be the state of the art anymore, right? At some point, it's going to factor in more than just what's the best next word. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting because that factors into a lot of exactly what we're talking about here. Not only, does AI have intent, but what the heck is it in the first place? What are we using the phrase AI, artificial intelligence, to really even mean? And I don't think there's agreement on that. I think a lot of companies
Yeah.
love to throw the phrase out there
Oh, sure.
as a
Raise the
marketing.
stock price. Yeah.
It's the new blockchain. But it's one of those things where they're using it, but they're not, the term doesn't mean what they hope you think it means in their
Yeah.
scenario. So anyway, it's interesting, it's complicated,
Oh,
and
yeah.
yeah. All righty.
Definitely. Yeah.
So what's cool? Oh man, you're about to jump in on one of mine, aren't you?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Never
Well,
mind. It's okay. It's okay. We'll let
you
it go.
have two. That's no fair. You have
Well, no,
two.
I have one and a half. So here's the thing.
Okay, we could share. It, you know, this
Yes,
doesn't have, nobody's keeping score. So
we can share. So I was going to mention Last of Us. Are you watching Last of Us?
no, I
Oh,
am
okay.
not. I don't watch that show. I
It's
have a
a
feeling it would be triggering for me. Ugh,
okay. Did you watch
yes.
Walking Dead? Was that one of yours?
I did, and I started watching it before that's kind of science fiction or post-apocalyptic stuff started bothering me, and I stopped watching it at some point, partially because, well, maybe the same reason a lot of people stopped watching it, but also partially because it was becoming a little like too dark.
Formulaic might be the word.
Well, dark for me, yeah, just.
So Last of Us, it's really, really good. The first season was awesome. Love the characters, love the people. It is, in fact, zombie apocalypse type thing, except in this case, the zombies are mushroom type spore infected. Continue to love it. We're on the
Yeah.
third episode of the second season. But the reason I'm kind of coolish on this, and I can't really explain why without major spoilers, but they did something in the storyline that just hurt. And it's one of those things where, man, they're going to have to work very hard to redeem themselves, in terms of, again, continued plot, continued character development, all that good stuff. This is going to have to be a really, really good show from here on out in order for me to continue to enjoy it, because it's based on a video game, and apparently video game players may have seen it coming, may have seen what I'm talking about coming.
Oh, I
But
wonder. Yeah.
anyway,
Yeah.
that's it. Last of Us, and I will let you. I will
Well, we'll share this one,
generously
and we
give
shouldn't be
next
surprised.
one.
Of course we are talking about the wonderful show Ludwig,
Yes.
available in the United States on BritBox. And it is, yeah, it's great. Detect all too short first season, right? We only got six episodes, and
Six
now we have to
episodes,
wait
yep.
forever. It's hard to really say much about the show without spoiling things, because even the setup of the show, I think it's too. I don't want to spoil it because it's fun to watch the beginning and just to see how it starts. But let's just say a British murder detective show, right? And the thing is that it's very involved with puzzle solving, right? The
Yes.
detective is somebody who is into puzzle solving, and so he is seeing these murders as a detective as puzzles to solve, like logic puzzles. Matter of fact, I think the very first one he solves, he says logically at this person who did it, and somebody says, "What was the motive?" And he goes, "What difference does that make?" Because in his world, it's like logically, this is the person that did it. I don't really care why.
What
That's
if it
not my
doesn't matter?
problem.
Yeah, it's a fun show. Like you said, six episodes. It's a again to not spoil it too much, I think of it as a very classic fish out of water story,
Yes, there's that
except
too.
it's
Yeah.
not the fish you think, right? I mean, it's a different fish for a change. So very definitely enjoyed it. We did do a little bit of research after the sixth episode, and IMDb doesn't currently list a second season, but the news apparently is that there will be a second season, but it won't be around for a while because they haven't even started filming it yet.
Yeah, it's so the star is David Mitchell, who a lot of fans of British humor and shows know. It's pretty well known over there. And he writes books too. Matter of fact, there has been, if you go back on our show not too long ago, a This Is Cool where I talked about a book that he wrote,
Oh,
a
cool.
history book about the early kings of Britain. So
That's
he writes
great.
history books too, with some humor in them. And he's been in various things like Peep Show and the fantastic Upstart Crow, which is a sitcom about Shakespeare, where he plays William Shakespeare. And it's a true slapstick sitcom. It's great. Another thing I highly recommend to people check out. So the thing where you said IMDb doesn't even show a second season. The funny thing was, is I heard about this show months ago because I like all this British stuff and I'm a fan of David Mitchell's. And I heard about it. I heard the premise and the name, and I could find nothing about the show because
All right.
I think in Britain it's not they're not so involved with the whole what's coming up and let's read Variety and Hollywood Reporter and all that. So the fact that the show was coming up meant nothing to nobody. It would be out when it was out, then everybody would enjoy it, right? And then in the United States you couldn't find anything about it, including if it would ever be shown in the United States. It was just going to be a BBC series and it was going to be on. And it wasn't until all of a sudden out of nowhere it went from this show will not even be in the United States, as far as we know, to the front page of BritBox, like overnight. So it was like no word, no word, no word, and oh yeah, we're promoting the show big time. So I'm not surprised a second season there isn't even talk about it, because it's just the way some of these British shows do things. We are in limbo now with Doctor Who as well, because Disney bought into the show for 2 seasons. They filmed those 2 seasons. They're in the middle of the second season now. Disney has not yet said if they want more. If Disney says no, no problem. The BBC owns the show. It would go back to just the BBC show. If Disney says yes, then of course they continue with their massive budgets that they've grown accustomed to these 2 seasons. But until that happens, there's like no word on whether next season of Doctor Who will be like next year or 3 or 4 years from now, as the BBC sometimes does.
Rodinger's series.
Yes.
It's yeah. To be clear on Ludwig, it did show in the BBC late last year, the full six episodes.
Yeah.
It's a classic case of the show not appearing here for scheduling, technical, political, business reasons, whatever you want to call it.
Weird British, American reasons. Yes.
I'm actually just impressed that I think it was before the move to Disney, but even especially now with the move to Disney, it used to be that Doctor Who would air before in the UK,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
like sometimes weeks before, and they narrowed it down to like the day before. But now, of course, it's simultaneous release across the planet.
Simultaneous release. They did just the couple seasons before it went to Disney, because there was a gap. BBC America did actually get to the point, yeah, where it was simultaneous. And that was a huge deal
Oh, yeah.
that it finally, we could watch at the same time. And it was necessary because online, because it's such a massive online fan base,
There's
you just,
that. And
it's
even though
spoilers.
it's the UK's show, I suspect that the American audience is bigger.
Yeah, which is why when they years even back in the 80s or early 90s, when they decided finally to make a Doctor Who movie, or not finally, because there had been actually a Doctor Who movie in the 60s, it was an American Doctor Who movie.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of interesting. Anyway.
In terms of self-promotion, the article I'd like to point people at this week is How Does Security Software Protect Me After Windows 10 End of Support? The issue is that, as we know, Windows 10 is coming to its end of support in October of this year. And a lot of people have machines that are not capable of running Windows 11. Lots of turmoil, lots of hand-wringing, lots of conspiracy theories, etc. One of the approaches to continuing to use Windows 10 safely after its end of support date is to have good security software. But a lot of people don't really grok exactly what that means and how that helps. So I pulled out one of my I don't know whether it's my best metaphor ever or my silliest metaphor ever, but it's Windows as a bathroom and the various ways that, hackers can get into your bathroom and what it means to, patch all the holes and have guards and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, that is how does security software protect me after Windows 10 end of support? AskLeo.com/179899.
Awesome. I'll point to a video that's been a big hit for me recently from last week called How to Use the Ports on Your Mac Correctly. Remember when like every port was a different shape? Like there's a different shape for the one that you hook your display up to, and the one you hook hard drives up to, and then if you needed like a camera, it was a different one. It was all these different shapes, and then everybody hated it. Everybody complained. The technology community solved the problem by creating USB-C, and they're all just USB-C shapes now. But now, of course, people are like, "What is with the, some of these ports? I could use for some things, and some not, some for others, and it's confusing, and all of that." And Apple's got some ports on their Macs that are they're all USB-C, but some are actually just USB ports. Some are Thunderbolt ports, and then it gets even more complicated because Thunderbolt is a protocol to itself. A Thunderbolt port can do Thunderbolt and USB, and DisplayPort, and power. So it gets confusing because people assume Thunderbolt does Thunderbolt, USB does USB, and or people don't assume that at all and just think anything that shape can plug into any port
Right,
that shape.
right.
So yeah, it gets confusing. So I did a video on that, and boy, a lot of people have watched that video. So I'll point to it.
I know that it's going to get better over time, but one of the things that is a little, I won't say irritating, but a little jarring, is that all of the USB ports in my new car are USB-C, which, I get it, it's great, but not all of my devices are USB-C. Now, I've got the little USB-A to USB-C converter, and I may end up having to get some more of those. But I just thought it was kind of interesting. The other thing that was interesting that I ran into is I ended up getting myself a backup camera for pulling the trailer, and something I could literally mount all the way in the back of the trailer and then see in the cab. That its display runs on 12 volts. Which does not come out of USB-C. There is a cable that takes USB-C, 5 volts, I think, only, and upscales it, or whatever the word is, to 12 volts, which I thought was fascinating that such a thing existed. So.
That makes sense. I ran into a situation that a car I rented, I think it was the one in New Zealand, had, as you would expect, a USB-A and a USB-C port right next to each other, mounted right there in the dash. I plugged in my phone into the newer, more advanced USB-C port, and I could not get it to connect. I looked closer, and I saw that above the USB-A port was a USB symbol. Above the USB-C port was a power symbol.
Oh, so
But now, if you had told me that one of these ports is power only,
right. It would have been
I
easy.
would have guessed the opposite. Like, why would you make the newer USB-C port power only and the old USB-A port the actual connection into the system? I fortunately did have an adapter for that direction, and it was fine. But yeah, I boggled my mind that it's like, first of all, you could do both. You could have both be fine, right? But you could, if you're going to make one power only, why the USB-A?
The
Anyway.
only argument I have for making the USB-C power is that USB-A can be 5 volts and 5 volts only. Whereas USB-C, maybe that is in this vehicle, has a range of different voltages that it is spec'd to be able to apply.
Which I would say, if I was the designer, I would have just made both of them USB-C. So,
We're not the designer. What are you? They don't listen to us.
yeah, right. Okay.
Alrighty, well, I think that pretty much does us for this week. As always, thanks everyone for listening, and we will see you here again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh247. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. And edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.